The last time we saw the Mishnah Daf Kuf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're really officially up to the Gemara, which is on the fourth of the wide lines. But I think, in order to appreciate this Gemara, we're going to review at least the first two lines in the Mishnah, two, three lines in the Mishnah, the Reisha. And we have, in this sugya, complications that begin with the Mishnah itself. In other words, not only is the Gemara going to quote a Braisa, which seems to contradict the Mishnah, that's bad enough, but there seems to be a problem inside the Mishnah, an internal contradiction. The Reisha of the Mishnah speaks about a concept called Mipnesha habailim misyashim mehem, which means there's a presumption of yeush. And that's a case where the muhsin, if you recall, the tax collectors, they confiscated Reuven's animal, and what happened is they took Reuven's animal and gave it to Shimon to replace Shimon's lost animal. They apparently were under the mistaken impression that they were giving Shimon back his animal. They confused one mule with another, which is very possible. And as a result, Shimon is now holding on to Reuven's mule. Now, as we discussed at great length, the mochsim, in many situations, are guilty of gzela. And that which they confiscate from the Jewish people is stolen goods. So now the issue becomes the following. Does Shimon, who received now possession of Reuven's chamor, does he acquire ownership on that chamor? Now, why would he acquire ownership on that chamor? So that's where the Mishnah introduces the concept of yesh. And that means that Reuven, whose chamor was confiscated, despairs of any hope of getting back his chamor. He realizes that once the mochsim have confiscated it, what's he going to do? He can try chai v'kayim, he's not going to get it back. Now, if you take a look carefully at Rashi on our Mishnah, Rashi says that the Mishnah paskins that Shimon could keep this mule, despite the fact that he knows very well that it belongs to Reuven. Originally it belonged to Reuven. Why? The mistama, the assumption is, misyashu habailim miyat. Immediately when Reuven's mule was confiscated, he gave up hope. Okay, so what happens when he gives up hope? Does that mean that he loses his ownership rights to the animal that was stolen, or to any object that was stolen? So I'm going to try to derive the answer to that conclusion from the next few words in Rashi. Rashi says, "Vikananhu hech," and he, the other one, that's the Gazlan, that's the Moches, made a kinyan and acquired ownership on Reuven's mule. Now look at the next few words of Rashi. "Biyeush v'shini rishus." Now, what Rashi is doing here is he's integrating two powers, if you will. There's the power of Yeush, and it has a certain efficacy. And then there's the power of Shini Rishus, and that has efficacy. And the Vav, in between these two, links together, the Vav HaMachaber, these two powers, the combination thereof is explosive. And Yeush with Shini Rishus, which we'll try to explain, achieves a complete kinyan. And once that kinyan is complete, Shimon can now say, I am the owner of this chamor, and I don't have to return it to Reuven. So Reuven's the original bialim. Now it could very well be, which is something that we'll have to investigate in the Gemara itself, in the sugya, it could very well be that Shimon, if he's the right type of person, and he wants to implement what we call lifnim ashuras hadin, then he will return this chamor to its original owner. But as far as the strict law is concerned, the kinyan is complete. He doesn't have to return the chamor. Now, in the past, we've seen If you recall, those who were with me a little bit earlier in Masechta Bava Kama, that there is a possibility of combining Yeush with something else in order to clinch the Kenyan. And that was called Shinui or Shinui Hashem. That's not what we're talking about here. Let me explain. If, let's say, Reuven steals he steals grain and he converts it into flour, that's called a Shinui. Which means that although the Gazlan has to return the object, the Torah says, Ve'eshim Sagzela, but Pamed Varamurim, if the object is still in existence. But if now that object has changed its form, that's called Shinui. It's not what we would call Ke'en She'gazal, Ve'eshim Sagzela. Asher Gazal, the Torah adds those two words, Asher Gazal, Ke'en She'gazal. It's not similar to the object that he stole, because now it's in a different state. It was before Chita, and now it's Solis, it's Kevach. But here in this case, the Moches stole a Chamor, and that Chamor is being passed on to some other Jew. It hasn't changed its physical structure, it hasn't changed its name. You also have something called Shinui Hashem, for example. It could be that if you steal bread before Pesach and you want to return it after Pesach, that's called the Shinui Hashem, because now it's Chomet Shavu Lava Pesach, has different dinim. Okay, there are many examples of Shinui Hashem, but our sugya, our Mishnah, doesn't fit into either category. It's not Shinui in the sense of a physical change, it's not Shinui Hashem in the sense of the identity or the halachic status of the object. Everything is identical. So how then was the Gazlan able to effectuate a kinyan when the Torah says Ve'eshim Sagazal Asher Gazal Asher Gazal? So Rashi adds a new element into the equation, and that's called Shinui Rishus, which means that when the Gazlan successfully passes on the object to a third party, now we not only have the Yeush of the Nigzal, but we also combine that with what? With the Havarat HaChefetz, with the Shinui Rishus. The combination thereof completely obliterates the Chiyuv HaShava Vaheshva Zagzeh L'Shav Gazal.
Does the Gazlan have that power?
And the Gazlan has that power because he has what we call Miksas Kinyanim. Now how do I know that a Gazlan has a partial Kinyan? So that's a Gemara that we learned back on Samach Hay, and the Gemara says there that Le'achar Gzela Shneim Einem Yecholim Lahagdish Zelafi Sheinu Shalov Zelafi Sheinu Reshuso. Meaning, the Baal HaChefetz, meaning the Nigzal, he can't be Magdish because it's out of his Reshus, and the Gazlan can't be Magdish because he doesn't own it. But it seems that he has a partial ownership in order to undermine the ability of the Nigzal to be Magdashit. So that's called Tchilas or Miktsas Kinyoni Gzela. Where do those Kinyoni Gzela reach fruition? When do they mature and become full-fledged acquisition? When he passes it on through a Hakna to a third party. And in that case, there's Yeush plus Shini Rishus. Now, this Mishnah that we're learning now, according to Rashi, is breaking new ground in the laws of Gzelim, presenting a principle that we're totally not familiar with, that has never been met before. We're seeing it here for the first time on stage, and that's Yeush and Shini Rishus. However, the Gemara later on is going to tell us that the Braisa that insists that Shimon return the mule to Reuven holds that Yeush b'chdi lo kani, that Yeush in and of itself is not enough to create a kinyan. Why does the Gemara say that? The Gemara should have said, well, it's not just Yeush, it's Yeush plus Shini Rishus. And we're going to have to assume that the Braisa therefore rejects the concept of Yeush plus Shini Rishus, meaning this brand new idea or principle that's being revealed for the first time here reflects the sheet of our Mishnah, that Yeush plus Shini Rishus is kona on behalf of the Gazlan, but the Braisa that's being quoted in the Gemara rejects that principle and maintains that Yeush plus Shini Rishus is nothing more than Yeush. And since Yeush itself, in and of itself, is not enough to create a kinyan, Yeush plus Shini Rishus is also not enough to create a kinyan.
It would seem like there's almost a catch-22 with the Yeush and Shini Rishus, because You're saying that the Shinu Rishus is a concept of the third party, not that the Shinu Rishus was done between Reuven and the Moches, but it was done between Reuven and Shimon. That would only work if you're saying that he bought it. He only bought it if it's Shinu Rishus is good, but what, they don't come. They can't come simultaneously.
Correct.
You're saying if he did buy it, then there's a Shinu Rishus. Aye, but he can't buy it unless there's a Shinu Rishus. If there's no Shinu Rishus, he didn't buy it. So
let me explain to you, what is your first name? I forgot.
Gedalia.
Gedalia is making a point here. It seems to be a catch-22, because how does the Gazan have the right to pass on ownership to a third party when he only has a kinyan of Yeush? Yeush itself is not enough. El what to Shini Rishus, but how can he get to Shini Rishus if he hasn't made an acquisition? It's a catch-22. He needs to acquire ownership in order to pass on that ownership to a third party. So based on this question, one of the great Lithuanian Rashi Yeshivas of the previous generation, who was of course killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemom, was Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, and he comes to the following conclusion. But I believe it's against a lot of Rishonim, but anyway, he submits the following thesis, that in truth, the Gazlan cannot be Koneh with Shini Rishus, because if it's not his, how can he effectuate a Shini Rishus not to be Koneh? It's a catch-22. But rather, what does Shini Rishus do? He says Shini Rishus only is relevant to Shimon. And basically what it's saying is the following. That the Gazlan himself, will call him the Moches, he's at the level of Yeish. Yeish itself is not sufficient to acquire the ownership, because the Torah says Veheshiv Sagzela Shogaza. And the Veheshiv Sagzela Shogaza creates a barrier. There are two forces that are in conflict with each other. One force is, well, the Gazlan made a Kenyan, he picked it up for himself. The other force is, but the Torah requires of him to return the object. So Rabbi Elchanan understands that in and of itself, the Maisa Gzela, the act of stealing and taking out of the Rishus for the purpose of acquiring for yourself, that itself potentially has the ability to create a kinyan. But it meets up with a blockage. And what is that blockage? The Heshivas Agzela Shagaza. Says Rabbi Elchanan, if we remove the Heshivas Agzela Shagaza, then Enochinami, the Gazan could be Koneh. How do we remove the Heshivas Agzela Shogaza? Exactly. When the Gazlan passes on the object to, in our case, we'll call him Shimon. Shimon was never guilty of the sin of stealing. He was never therefore obligated in the mitzvah of Hashava. And therefore, as far as he's concerned, Yeish could be Koneh. So basically, Rabbosai, according to Rabbi Elchanan, Yeish plus Shini Rishus means Yeish. What do I mean? What effectuates the kinyan is Yeish. We're going to find this in Aveda, and Rabbi Elchanan is going to assume that just like Yeish is Koneh in Aveda, which means that if I find your object lost after you were Messiahish, because we passed it like a bye, right? So you were already Messiahish, then I can keep the object for myself. Why? Because Yeish removes your ownership. Now, I'm not saying everybody agrees to that, but there is such a thesis. Wait, let me think, because I'm going to lose my train of thought. So what am I saying here, according to Rabbi Elchanan? Rabbi Elchanan is borrowing the concept of Yeish from Aveda, and he's applying it to Gzela, and he presents the thesis that the Gzela itself with Yeish is enough to effectuate the king, and if not for the fact that he has a Chovas HaShova. What Shini Rishus really does is it activates the Yeish. It allows the Yeish to complete its process. Go ahead.
Why do you have to go that far? You can just say that Yeish makes it Hefker.
Oh.
Just like by Aveda. When a guy is a Shayish, it becomes Hefker.
Oh. So I'll prove to you that that's not so.
So when this...
How do I prove to you that Yeish is not Hefker? Because of Abai. Abai says the following. If the owner who lost the object was Mishyash first, and then you picked it up, you're the Motze, then Yeish is effective. But says Abai, if you picked it up before Yeish, Yeish is not effective. But Abai agrees that if you pick it up before Yeish, and now the Bailam declare it as Hefker, then you can keep it for yourself. It's first come, first serve, kol hakodim zoh. So you see that Yeish is not Hefker. By the way, the fact that Yesh is not Hefker can be proved in many different ways, but that's for a whole shir unto itself. Rabbi Yossi says, for example, one of the Tanoim, that there's no Hefker unless there's a presence of three people. Not only that, the Ran says at the beginning of Pesachim that the language of Hefker is Haredi Mafkir Nechasai. That's not what Yesh is all about. Yesh means he made a statement of Vayali L'chisaron Kiz. That's not Hefker. And not only that, there's a famous Nesivus, which again is a whole shir unto itself, that even after Yesh, you still don't have the right to own it automatically. There are all sorts of strings that are attached. Okay. Now, Rabbo, say, everything that I've presented to you until this point is based on Rashi. However, the Rashba has another approach. Now, let's try to understand what bothers the Rashba. The Rashba believes that in order to effectuate a Shinui Rishus, there's got to be not only an exchange of the object, but also of the money that's being paid for the object, which means damim. And according to the Rashba, if the Gazlan sells the object and receives payment, that's called Yeyush and Shini Rishus. But if the Gazlan passes on to the object to someone else, not B'derech HaKinyonim, in other words, he just simply takes the donkey and he passes it on, in this case to Shimon. And by the way, why does he do so? He thinks, the Moches, the Gazlan, mistakenly, that this is the very mule that belongs to Shimon. And he wants to set the record straight. We'll call him a Yid, and he did Tshuva, whatever the case may be. We'll have to work all that, all the psychology out later. But conceptually what it means is that the Moches is giving back something which he believes is, he's giving it to the rightful owner. That's not Derech HaKinyonim. For example, if I own this object and I give it to you because I think you own it, mistakenly, and Shimon never owned this mule, it was never his to begin with, but the Moches thinks it belongs to Shimon, that's not B'derech HaKinyonim. And according to the Rashba, Shini Rishus requires Derech HaKinyonim, it requires that the Gazan do an actual Haknah to the person that what we call the third party, in this case Shimon. So the Rashba is going to have to come up with another approach here, which is basically called Yeish B'chidi Kani. Now, why do I get excited about this Rashba, about Yeish B'chidi Kani, which means Yeish in and of itself is enough to acquire the Kinyan? Because if we take a look at the Gemara says, Tana, we learned this Mishnah last time, so that's why I'm starting here with okay. The Gemara. The Gemara says, Tana, im natal, machzir lebailam harishonim. That if Shimon receives this mule, as the Moches presents it to him, then he's required to return it to the original bailam. And Rashi says, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra maschil, Yachzil Rishonim. Do you see that, Rashi? Rashi says, Upliga Brisa Masnisen. Rashi sees a head-on collision between the Brisa and the Mishnah. The Mishnah was predicated on the rule of what? Yeish plus Shita Rishus. And therefore, Shimon is coded a mule and he doesn't have to return it. The Brisa insists, Yachzil Rishonim. So it means that the Brisa is not operating with this premise. Which means that according to the Brisa, even though there was a Shini Rishus, that's how Rashi's going to have to answer, that's not enough to clinch the Kenyan. But take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Kasavar, what is the underlying thesis of this Brisa? Yeish Bichdi Lo Kani. Now what do you mean Yeish Bichdi? Yeish Kidi means Yeish alone is not Kona. We're not talking about Yeish alone, we're talking about Yeish and Shini Rishus. Who said that? Rashi. But who disagreed with that, John? The Rashba, because the Rashba says that this is not called Shini Rishus. So I'm excited here about the Rashba. Again, I'm usually a big fan of Rashi, but in this case I think the Rashba has one up, because the Rashba is telling us that the entire machlokas here, which the Gemara presents between the Brisa and the Mishnah, revolves around the power of Yeish. Which means that although Yeush is effective in a case of Aveda, Yeush is not necessarily effective in a case of Gzela. And now basically the machlokes between our Mishnah and our Braisa is whether or not Yeush from Aveda should be the source of Yeush and Gzela. Can we equate Gzela with Aveda or not? And that's something that we want to analyze. According to Rashi, on the other hand, the machlokas between the Mishnah and the Braisa is whether or not Yeish plus Shini Rishus is Kohen. And therefore the Tosis Reed and others, they try to explain that the language of the Gemara, according to Rashi, Yeish Biktilo Kani, means that since Yeish plus Shini Rishus is not Kohen, it means that Shini Rishus doesn't add anything to Yeish, and basically therefore Yeish is not Kohen. And this fits in so beautifully to Rabbi Chanan, I think, because Rabbi Chanan says that the question of Yeush plus Shini Rishus ultimately comes down to the power of Yeush. Because Yeush itself would be enough to establish a kinyan, but the problem is there's a Chiyuv Hashava that doesn't apply to the third party. And according to Rabbi Chanan, it makes no difference, as the Rashba would insist, whether it was B'derech HaKinyonim, how did the third party get a hold of this object? In any event, he does not have a Chiyuv Hashava, he didn't steal it, and if there's no Veshim, it's like Zeil, and if the Yeish could be Koneh, comes along the Brice and says, no. The third party has to return the object to the first party, meaning to the Nigzal, and why? Because Yeish Bechdilo Koneh, meaning that Yeish never had that power to be Koneh. So if this be the case, then we have to really ask ourselves the following question. What's the difference between Yeush in Aveda, which clearly is Koneh, and Yeush in Gzela, which is not Koneh? And I want to suggest two different answers, two different approaches to this question. And you'll decide which one you like. Maybe I'll tell you which one I like, maybe not. I don't want to prejudice you. One way is to say that in the case of a gazlan, the nigzal generally has recourse through the bezdin to get it back. You know, there's a gazlan, wanted, dead or alive, you know, we get these pictures are posted, maybe, I don't know, I'm just dramatizing it. There's a chance that in bezdin he'll get it back. And this is going to be the whole discussion of the Gemara later on. Does he hold out for hope, thinking optimistically he'll get a hold of the gazlan and force him in bezdin to pay up or not? Aveda is a little different. Let's take the classical case of Aveda. You have, for example, an ear sharuba akum. What are the chances that you'll ever get that back? First of all, who's going to pick it up? A guy. The guy might pocket it. And even if he doesn't pocket it, he's super honest, he wants to find you. How is he going to find you? How is he going to trace you down? What, is he going to come into shul on three regolim and make akhroz? I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. And therefore, there's more of a chance that an Aveda is an Aveda. What do I mean by that? That basically, ownership in halacha means accessibility. Do I have accessibility to the object? If somebody is holding on to my object, even if he's a no good bum, he's a gazlan, it's still within the realm of accessibility. But if I've lost the object and I have no clue where to find it, it's not b'derech hinuach where he put it down, then it's got what's called a shame of it. The shame of it means the status of the object is of it, it's out of my rishus and I don't know where it is. That already, shall we say, pushes us towards hafkas bias, towards undermining his ownership. However, there's one catch 22. And what is it? That the Torah says that anyone who finds it has to give it back. In the case of Yeshuruba Akum, we'll see what happens. But in the case of Yeshuruba Yisrael, okay, maybe I'll hold out for optimism until the point of Yeish. Comes along Yeish, and the owner of the object who lost it, and he declares that he's given up hope, at that point, the shame avud is complete. The object is totally lost. The owner of the object is not even lifting up a finger to do any sort of tircha, any mamatz, any effort to try to relocate his object. At that point, it's objectively lost, and it's like zuto shel yam, it's like someone who lost something at the bottom of the sea, and there's no bias. So again, what's the power of Yeish in Aveda? to complete the Shem Ovid. Why is the Shem Ovid incomplete? Because the Baalim are still holding out for hope until the point they despair. Once they despair, that's it. We've cut the umbilical cord between the object and its owner. It's Yotzer Mershusa Legamre. That's the Shem Ovud. And here's where the machlokus between Abai and Rava comes in, and Rava comes up with this new halacha, which is very difficult to understand, called Yeish Shalom Midas, that even if he doesn't know it's lost, there's already Yeish. And how does that work? But somehow, Rava puts so much emphasis and weight on the Shem Avud that if we know, or we can anticipate that he will be Messiah when he finds out that it's lost, it's already got a Shem Avud. Now, how that works in the halachic universe with future, present, and past, I don't know. But it's already as if we anticipate the future. That's called Yeish Shalom Midas. Abai doesn't take it that way. Abai says that Yeish has to clinch the Shem Avud before, and that's going to happen when he finds out that he lost. In the case of Gzela, the Shem Guzzle is not enough to be Mafkia Bailus. That's one way of explaining the difference between Yeush and Yeush in Aveda and Yeush in Gzela. For now, I think that'll do. The second pshat will come up, I think, either today or maybe next time.
Can you say that there in Gzela there's only one? You're one step removed from the Chiyuv HaTorah of Yeshiva Sagzeda. But in Aveda, there are two steps, because somebody may not have even found it. So you don't even know that it's in the realm of possibility for somebody to give it to you.
But I'm afraid, Gedalia, that's going to make the problem even more difficult. Because again, what I want to try to justify is that even though Kuli Alma Lo Pligi, nobody denies that Yeish operates and it's effective in Aveda, with regard to Gzela, we have here on our Sugya, Machlok Shina Braisa and the Mishnah. So if you're telling me that in Aveda, it's two steps removed.
That's why there's Yeh. That's why there's more Yeush.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because
okay.
Two steps removed.
Oh, no, I didn't cop what you're saying. You're saying that why should I hold out any hope if I don't even know if anybody found it?
Yeah, two things have
that. Right, in the case of Gazlan, somebody's holding on.
Somebody's got it.
All right, we'll think about that. Sounds good. Now, Rabosai, I mentioned to you at the outset that if this sugya is complicated because of the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, the Mishnah itself as an integral whole is complicated. There seems to be a stira between the Reisha of the Mishnah and the Seif of the Mishnah. Let's go back to the Seif of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hamatzil, this is in the Mishnah itself, it's line 4, Hamatzil min ha-nohar, o min ha-gayos, o min ha-listim, im nisyashua ba'al ma'reilu shalom. Now please underline those words, im nisyashua bailim, as opposed to the ratio where we said mipnesha bailim nisyashim, and there was a premise of Yeush. The Seifa says that we have to know whether he was Messiah. We need two witnesses to testify that we heard him declare Yeush. Now, if you're only focused on Matzil Mina Nohar, where you saw an object of somebody else that was being swept away by the stream, or Menagayas, or you saw that the military was confiscating his property. So in that case, you know what? Maybe to the same extent that you could save it from the Nahar or the Gayas, maybe the owner will come by and save it. Or maybe he's holding out some hope. So we need to hear an explicit Yeish. But the third case in the Sefer is Listim. And in the Reish it says, Notlo Listim. And yet, Mipnei Shabailim Misyashim. So what's the shift here between Mipnei Shabailim Misyashim in the Reish of Listim to Im Nisyashua Bailim, if the Bailim of Misyash in the Sefer in the case of Listim? And the one who notices this is Rashi. Rashi, Dibra Maskel, Im Nisyashua Bailim on the Mishnah, Rashi says that in the case where you saved it from those three possibilities of loss, the Shaminon, we heard the Iyayish. We heard means that their witnesses testified to the fact that we heard his declaration. The Omar, he said, Vailech Yisaron Kis, woe to me that I lost it. Avostoma, in the absence of any knowledge explicitly that he was Messiah, lo, then it's not Yesh, Vakasha, list him to Seifa, list him to Reisha. So Rashi tells us that this contradiction is going to be the subject of Rav Ashi. Now, just to keep you, get like a heads up, so to speak, Rav Ashi is about three lines further in the Gemara, Amar Rav Ash. And Rav Ash is going to say that there are two types of listing. There's non-Jewish robbers and the Jewish robbers. And Rashi claims here in the Mishnah that the purpose of Rav Ash, even though the Gemara never posited this question, this contradiction, is to answer up the obvious, blatant contradiction in the Mishnah. Other Rishonim are going to disagree with Rashi, and they're going to insist that there is no stira, there's no contradiction between the listim of the Reisha and the listim of the Seifa. Okay. So now let me make a few points.
How do they answer that?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do now. But first I want to go point by point. Okay. First of all, to summarize, Rashi holds that our Mishnah is predicated on Yeish plus Shini Rishus. The Rashba says this cannot be considered Shini Rishus because the Moches is returning what he thinks is the object to its rightful owner. That's not called Derech HaKinyonim, and if there's no Das Machne here, then there's no Shini Rishus. Therefore, Rashba learns that our whole sugya is Yeish. Number two. According to Rashi, there's Yeush and Shini Rishus, even though there's no Das Machne, correct? Because again, we're under the premise, we're working with the premise that the Moches is giving back that which he thinks is rightfully his. Oh. Now, I don't know what the Rashba is going to do with the case of Omen al-Listim in the case of Matzil. Remember that the Sefer of the Reisha is someone who steals, who saves it from Listim. What does it mean he saves it from Listim? Does it mean he made a deal with the Listim, with the Gazlan? He said, Mr. Gazlan, I'm going to pay you for this Gzela, sell it to me? Matzil min al-Listim means somehow he snapped it, he snatched it away from the listim. And that's going to be an effective kinyan on behalf of the matzil if there's yeish. Again, why if there's yeish, Rashi says that's a problem. But if there's yeish, so there is yeish. If there's yeish, then matzil min al-listim is kona. How is he kona? We're holding that yeish b'chdi lo kani. It must be yeish plus shini rishus. But what do you mean shini rishus? The Gazlan didn't give it. The Listin didn't give it over to the matzil, to this third party. So this would clearly indicate that Rashi is correct, namely that yeish and shini rishus is operative even without absent derech hakinyonim. The Gazlan is not willingly being machnit. So therefore, this Sefer that we're focused on now about Matzil is a clear-cut stira, a contradiction to the Shita of the Rashba. Comes along the Nesivis with an unbelievable chiddush, which I want to analyze with you. Says the Nesivis, the case of Matzil min al-Listim is Harelu Shalo Mishum Shah Mitnei Shah Bailim Hisyashu. What's the language of the Mishnah? Im Nisyashu Abailim means the following. The Yeish took place before the Gazlan actually stole it. Watch this. According to the Nesivis, the Rashba holds that if Yeish takes place first and Shini Rishus takes place later, which means that first the Gazlan stole it, then the Nigzal was Misyayish, then the Gazlan was Machnet to someone else, that Kinyan is valid because it was Kedarkei HaKinyon. But, says the Nesivis, there's one case where Yeish is Kona and I don't even need Shini Rishus. And what's that? Where the Yeish took place before the Gazlan stole it. In other words, when the Listim approached him, you know, with their submachine guns, at that point, even before they stole it from him, you know, take it all. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to confuse you, but there was a a rabbi in New York who wanted to allow people to carry wallets because he was afraid somebody was killed by a listim because he didn't have a wallet to give them. You know, sometimes you don't give them a wallet, they kill you just because you don't have a wallet. So, you know, try to tell me you're from a Yid and therefore you don't carry your Rishus HaRabim, whatever. So, didn't work. So that's an unfortunate situation. So in the aftermath of that action, that one of those rabbis wanted to say we should allow all Jews to carry wallets on Shabbos because of the listim. And, you know, if you know where 125th Street is in New York, there's a lot of listim over there, you know. Now they're trying to clean it up. Jimmy Carter and all that. In any event, yeah, he bought there in that neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, recently.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't it Carter, or am I confusing it with another former president? What? Oh, Clinton, I'm sorry. Jimmy Guy Clinton. Yeah, Clinton and Borton Hall. Anyway, so on both sides, comes along the deceivers, and he says, in a scenario where the Yeish took place before the Goslin actually got a hold of the object, and the Nigzal says to the guy, to this listim is always, you know, with guns and Clay Zion, take whatever you can, you know. Get, you know, I just want to save my skin. In that case, Yeish alone is kona. Why? And I think there's only one possible answer. That here we're going to derive Yeish from Aveda to Gzeil. In other words, what the Nesivus has in mind, and that's how he's learning this, the mission of Matzil, is not Gzeila, but Aveda. What makes it into an Aveda? How can Yeish be operative? The Gaza didn't even steal it yet. The answer is it's an Aveda. What difference does it make if the object is not accessible to me because it's floating down a river, or because I lost it in a city of Rov Akum, or wherever I was Mesiaish? And a case where I was Mesiaish up front because I know that once the Gaza gets a hold of it, I have no chance in a million of getting it back. That is Yeish on a Gzela. It's talking about Bosai. What we gain here is something unbelievable. How would the Rashba understand the Kenyan of the Matzil in the case of Listim when the Matzil didn't offer any payment to the Listim? The Listim didn't, Midaitam, decide to bequeath the object and transfer ownership to the Matzil. How then can the Mishnah establish that Yeish would be Kone? After all, the Rashba needs Yeish plus Shini Rishos, and Shini Rishos is only Vidarki HaKinyan. The answer is, we're not dealing with what? With Gzela, we're dealing with an Aveda. Well, and that's what I think the Nesivus means, that the Yeish took place before the Gzeil.
Because the listim did Yeish?
No. What I'm suggesting is that as soon as the listim threatened the Nigzal, and the Nigzal is Mesiaish, that already means that the object, even before it reaches the hands of the Gazlan, is lost. It's an Aved. And if it's an Aveda, then Yeish is meaningful.
No, but that means that the listim was Kone, but now we have someone who's Matzil from the listim. So now where's the Yeish there?
Well, let me try to think of what you're saying. Offhand, I didn't hear what you're saying. So what difference does it make?
Matzil be the listim. So you were saying that based on the Sivas, that the reason the way the listim was able to be Kone to begin with, because the first owner was in Siash before he took it. So therefore, the Yeish works and I can be Kone. But now he's being Matzil from the
right. Listim.
How's he acquire the ownership of the listen? The listen now is a full-fledged owner.
Ah, you're saying that the moment that the listen took it into their hands, they made a kinyan on it.
Of course.
Let me think about that for a second. You're saying that...
But if it's an Aveda, wouldn't he have now a chiyuv of a heishiv as Aveda, hashav as Aveda? So that's what it's essentially is being kind.
No, we're asking about the Matzil. How does the Matzil acquire ownership if the listim already made a kinyan? Just one second. Kinyan.
Not a full kinyan, because he has a still fee of a...
Yeah, but you can't just grab it from his hand. I mean, what do you mean he has a Hashem Sveh? Why does he have a Hashem Sveh? There was Yeish. I'll just read to you the Nesivus inside. Let's see if we could work this out, and then we'll go on because time is of the essence. He says the following. He says, Koshal HaRashba Ke Shel HaRashba Sova She'eno Nechshav L'Shinu Rishus Elim Nasa Midas HaGazlan B'tireitz She'nesiyashu Abayim Kodim She'bo Lidei HaListim Zemoyel Afilu B'li Shinu Rishus. Unless, I don't know, you know what, I should look up the Nesivus inside. Maybe Matzil min alistim. Maybe Matzil min alistim means before the Gaza made a kinyan on it. I don't know. It's a good question. But anyway, you hear the Nesivus.
There's a chizuk for that, I think, that the listim zion is not the same as the gneva, because you see with the shomrim, a shomer sachar is chayav b'gneva v'aveda, but listim zion, he's patur, it's considered onus, and you could explain based on the nesivos that as soon as the listim come, it's together aveda, so he doesn't have the chiyuv anymore of the shmirah.
You mean he has a chiyuv shmirah only of a shomer socha, but not of onsim or something?
Gneiv of aveda, right?
Right.
Listim zuyan, he's patur. It's not the same as a gneiva.
Right, so I don't follow what you're saying. So therefore what?
So the list in Mizuyan is not the same concept as...
I see what you're saying. Oh, you want to say that the list in Mizuyan is an onus, whereas Gneva is a chiyuv. Yeah.
That's Mechazik in Nesivos.
Yeah. Just one second. Again, let's go over the brisa again. Tana im notal machzil lebailam arishonim. So it means that when the third party, we'll call him Shimon, receives the chamor from the listim or from the moches, then he has to return it to its original bailam. So the Gemara says, Kosovar, the brisa holds that Yeush kidi lo kani. Okay. Now, I told you before that the Gemara postulates a stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And that's how Rashi learns. Again, let's just read it again. Rashi says, Yachzil Rishonim, the second Rashi in the Gemara, Upligi Braisa Amasnisa. So Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, and he thinks that there's no machlokes between our Mishnah and the Braisa. What's the difference between our Mishnah and the Braisa? They're talking about two different scenarios. The Braisa, says Tosfos, is talking about a case when the Yeush took place after the Gazlan, in this case the Moches, passed on the Gzela to Shimon. Whereas the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Yeush took place immediately following the Gzela, in other words, as soon as the Moches absconded with the object of Reuven, at that point Reuven was Misyaish. Says Tosfos the following: when does Yeush plus Shinu Rishus operate? When is it effective? That's only if the Yeush took place before the Shinu Rishus. And that's our Mishnah. The case of the Braisa is where the Yeush took place after the Shinu Rishus. Reuven found out that his chamor was in the hands of Shimon, and at that point he was Misyaish. That Yeush and Shinu Rishus doesn't work. Why? Because the Shinu Rishus took place before the Yeush. So just to summarize, Shitas HaTosis is that not like the Rashba that we mentioned before, that Yeush and Shinu Rishus is only kona if the Shinu Rishus is a bona fide kinyan. But Tosfos says that the Yeush has to take place before the object was passed on to the rishus of the third party, in this case of Shimon. So let's try to see if we can take a minute of time and figure out, why is the sequence so critical? Why does the Yesh have to take place before the Shini Rishus? So I was thinking the following. That based on Rabbi Chanan, maybe it makes sense, because Rabbi Chanan essentially identifies the power of Kinyan as what? What actually, according to Rabbi Chanan, if you haven't forgotten it in the last half hour, what actually effectuates the Kinyan of the Gazlan?
Yeish.
Elo what is a Chiv Hashav, and the Chiv Hashav blocks the Yeish from being Chal. Okay, so now he passes on, the Gazlan passes on the object to a third party. In such a case, you have Yeish and Shini Rishus, there's no Chiv Hashav on the third party. And the male Yeish can be Kona. Oh, but if I reverse the order, if I start with what? With Shini Rishus first, and then Yeush, that Shini Rishus doesn't change anything. It doesn't impact at all. Why? Because if there wasn't any Yeush yet, then the Chiyuv Hashav is Chal on anyone who picks up the object. Not only the Gazlan who put his hand in someone else's pocket and took it out, but anyone who picks up the object before Yeush is considered a Gazlan. And therefore there's no possibility of a Kinyan Yeush. Why? Because Kinyan Yeush can't be Chal vis-a-vis a Gazlan. Why not? Because the Gazlan is Chayev in Hashava. Who's Chayev in Hashava? So we said only the Gazlan is Chayev in Hashava. But that's a misleading statement. It depends what you mean by that statement. If you mean that only the Gazlan who picked it up and put it into his Rishus, he took it from Reuven and put it into his Rishus, that's incorrect. Because as long as there was no Yeush, then there's no difference between Ploni Almoni who took the object out and somebody else who took the object out. There's always going to be a Chiyuv Hashava. Before Yeush, there's a Chiyuv Hashava in anybody. So the Shini Rishus hasn't changed anything. And therefore, says Tosfos, the Bryce is correct in assuming that Shimon has to return this to Reuven, because the Yeush of Reuven took place when? After the Shini Rishus, after it came into the possession of Shimon. Now the Gemara says, Ikar di Amri, a second answer to this stira. And what does the Braisa mean? Im bala hachzir, yachzir levayla marishon. Rashi says, Im bala hachzir, shechasid hu. What does chassid mean? Does he wear a strimal? What does chassid mean? Lifnim? Nishur Sadin. Meaning, technically, Yeush is Koneh, even according to the Braisa. But if he wants to be a chassid, then he'll return it to the Bailim. Now, Rashi says, what's the chiddush here? Anybody could be a chassid. The Braisa doesn't have to describe or advocate how a chassid should be a chassid. Says Rashi, Yachzir l'bayil marishonim v'lo l'moches. Meaning the moches is giving him, supplying him with this chamar, and he's going to say thanks but no thanks, and he's going to return the chamar to the moches. That's not with nivishus adin. That's not a kiyum of hashava. The kiyum of hashava means to bring the mule back to its original owner. Don't give it to the moches. What's the moches going to do with it? He's not going to seek out Reuven and return it to Reuven. However, I thought that maybe without Rashi, you could possibly interpret this Mishnah a little bit differently. That what's the chiddush of chassid hu? Not that he has to return it to Reuven and not to the moches, but there's a much more fundamental chiddush, or a simpler chiddush, and that is that even though the Braisa, like the Mishnah, adopts the position of Kani, whether it's Yeush or Yeush plus Shini Rishus, nevertheless, that Kinyan Kani is not able to undermine the status of the object as a stolen object. What do I mean? There are two dinim. There's one din in Dini Mamas, And there's another din in Dine Mitzvah and Dine Isser Vehetra. As far as Dine Mominus is concerned, there's no reason in the world why Shimon, even if he's the greatest chassid, Midbad and Peis, that he should return the object to Reuven. It's his. Why should he give up his object for Reuven? If he cares about Reuven, you know, he wants to invite him for dinner, he wants to write a check for tzedakah, that's fine. But why does he have to return his chamor to Reuven? He was already calling the chamor. The answer is that there's another din. And that is the din of Iser, which is chal in the cheftza. The cheft itself is a cheftza gozel. And although in Dini Mominus it's yours, Mr. Shimon, but since it's a Heftar Guzzle, and the shame Guzzle is still chal on the object, therefore you should return it to its owner if you want to be a Lifnimishus Hadina Chosid. Now, how do I prove, that's going to be the challenge, that the shame Guzzle is still chal on the object? So I think the proof might be from the Sugya in the third pack of Sukkah called Mitzvah Bobavir. And the Mishnah establishes in the third parak of Sukkah that a stolen lulav cannot be used for the mitzvah of lulav. Why not? He makes a kinyan on it. The Torah says ulakatem lachem, and let him be yotzei. But the answer is that the shame guzzle is still chal, and something which in its very essence, its status as a heftz, as an object, is guzzle, cannot be used for a mitzvah. And the source for mitzvah b'avir is a carbon. If you steal someone's animal, you can't bring that animal on the mizbeach. No way, no how. And why? Because the chefta has a shame guzzle to it. The identity of the object is that of what? Of guzzle, and that should not be brought on the mizbeach.
By lulav, there's an extra inyan, tachtim lachem, also by carbon. It's hard to bring a raya from there.
But I'm just suggesting, Herb, that maybe, again, this has to be studied in the Tosfos on Daf Samach Vav, that maybe even if he effectuates a kinyan, he still shouldn't use it for a mitzvah.
Because of the lachem.
Could be because of the lachem, but it's also because it has a shame guzzle in it. Right? It's not vekrasi no lefechasech. It's not no. It's not considered a beautiful object. Amar Rav Ashi. The Mishnah says that in the case of a matzil, then if we hear about the yeush, then the matzil can acquire ownership. Omar Rav Ashi, lo shanu ela belistim ove kochavim, avol belistim Yisrael lo. So Rashi in the Mishnah already tells us that Rav Ashi here is coming to reconcile the ratio of the Mishnah with the Sefer of the Mishnah. Why is it in the ratio of the Mishnah we assume Yeush, and in the Sefer of the Mishnah we have to hear Yeush explicitly? The answer is that the ratio is talking about a case of listim oved kochavim, that the mortars who stole this object are non-Jews. And in such a case, there's an assumption of Yeush. The Jew will not get his object back. Of a list in Yisrael, but in the Sefer we're talking about Jewish listim, and from them we'll be able to get it back. The Jewish mafia. Savar lemachar, what is the nigzal feel? Lemachar nakitna le bedina. That in the case of a Yisrael, I have recourse to sue him in a bezdin, in a Jewish court, and I'll be able to get it back. And especially since I recognize him, because that's the difference between a gazlan and a ganav, and therefore I'll be able to retrieve my object. I'm not going to be misyayish. Therefore the Mishnah predicates the conclusion, the condition has to be met that we know he was misyayish. Maskif l'Rav Yosef Adarabba. Ipcha mistavra. Ove kochavim, dafka in the case of ove kochavim, there's reason not to be misyash, to hold out of hope that you'll get it back from the ove kochavim because of the power of the courts. The dayone begeti, or begeti te, or begese, whatever it reads. And Rashi says this is a word that indicates gaiva. Gaiva means that the bezdin works with a brazen. The courts of the goyim work with a brazen, bold power. You know, the executive power of government is powerful. They'll make sure that the gzela is taken out of the hands of the gazlan, the list of mizuyah. And therefore, lo miyash. He knows that he has recourse to the non-Jewish courts. But Yisrael, if the thief was Yisrael. And again, you have to know now, why is it that if the thief is Yisrael, he's going to end up in a Jewish court, not in a non-Jewish court? Okay, that has to do with Masechet Sanhedrin. But in any event, Kevon di Omar Neymar Miyash. In the case of Yisrael, there's a possibility of Neymar. What does Neymar mean? Neymar means, and again, this is a sugya in Sanhedrin, Tain Sevitainlo. Neymar means that Beis Din doesn't beat up the guy till he's blue in the face, so to speak, but rather they give him a mandate and they tell him, go pay up the gzela. And meanwhile, the Gazan goes out of Beis Din and he says, go fly a kite, I'm not interested in returning the gzela. It's very hard to get it out of the hands of the Gazan in the case of a Jewish court. Other Rishonim say it's hard to get it out because you need two Edim, and if there aren't two witnesses, then in a Jewish court, we cannot rely on anything less than that evidence in order to hand out a verdict that the Gazan has to. So therefore, the Jew who is victimized by this Jew doesn't feel that he has recourse and he'll ever get it back. He's Misyayish. Eliyit Mar, Asefet Mar. So we take Ravashi now and we reinterpret Ravashi. Ravashi is not referring to the case of Listim in the Resha, but rather to the case of Listim in the Seif of Matzil. HaMatzil v'dovdei kochavim u'min al-Listim im nisyashu abaylim in. Stoma lo, until we hear explicitly that the owner of the object was Misyayish, we don't assume Yeish. And why not? After all, in the Resha, which is also a case of Listim, we assumed Yeush. Comes on Ravashi and he says, Lo Shanu Ela Oved Kochavim Mishum Didaine Begese. In other words, that the reason why in the Sefer and Listim we have to hear explicitly, just one second, in the Seifa we have to hear explicitly that he was Misyayish. And why is that? Says Rav Ashi, be Ove Kochavim, and therefore we assume he wasn't Misyayish. Why wasn't he Misyayish if the listim were non-Jews? Mishum Didaine Begese, because he knows he has recourse and the non-Jewish courts are so powerful, they'll for sure get back his stolen goods. Aval, but in the case of the Resha, why is there an assumption of Yeush? And the answer is, Listim Yisrael, because the Listim were Jews. And Kevan di Amri Meimar, since the court is very weak, so to speak, and very soft, and it just instructs the Gazlan to give back the object and return it, but they don't beat him until he's blue in the face, therefore he's going to give up hope, Umiyayish, and therefore in the Resha of that Mishnah, Listim Yisrael, we have an assumption, a premise of Yeush. Now, from here and on, the Gemara is going to try to analyze this issue of assumption of Yeush, which is called Stam Gnevo, Stam Gzela Yeush Bailim Havi. We just finished saying, and this is the introduction to the next sugya, that in our Mishnah there's an assumption of Yeush when the object was stolen, in this case by Jewish thieves. And is that really true? Well, Listim is generally speaking a case of Gzela, but there's also another case which is called Gneva. And in Gneva, do we assume, like we did in the case of Gzela, that there's an automatic premise of Yeush? On the one hand, maybe there's a Kal V'chomer here. If in the case of Listim of Gzela, where he faced the guy with guns, and there is a possibility, therefore, of suing this Listim in Beis Din, but no, he gives up hope, and there's a premise of Yeush, then how much more so in the case of Gneva, where he doesn't even know who the guy is, he has no clue who stole it from him, certainly we can assume Yeush. Or do we say no? That Dafka, if Listim might be a case of Gneva, again, we're going to have to be a little bit more liberal about how to interpret the word Listim, then it makes sense that we assume Gzela, that we assume Yeush. But in the case of Listim, where he boldly accosts him with a knife or a gun, in such a case, he's misyayish. So the question is again, when do we assume yayish? Do we assume yayish in listim because of the power of the of this armed robber? But in the case of Kneva, he'll find the guy and he'll sue him and he'll get back his money. Or the on the opposite end of the spectrum, in the case of listim, he's not misyayish because at least he identifies the guy and he hopes that he'll get it back. But in the case of Kneva, he doesn't know. So the Gemara now is going to say, and with this we'll conclude for Mincha, that this question hinges on another question. And that is, who has the power to determine that a certain raw material is considered a kli to be makabel tuma? Does the gadav have the ability to do that, or does the gazlan have to do it? And that all depends upon whether we assume yeish or we don't assume yeish. And that, Bli Neder, is the Mishnah in Kalim, which we want to cover on what's today? On Yom Shlishi, Yom Chamishi, Beis Hashem. Okay then? Trying to figure out what.
Rabbi, the nesivos, how would this be different than the typical case of Talyu v'Zabin versus Talyu v'Yahiv? What's the din of Talyu v'Hifkir? What's that middle case? So Talyu v'Zabin is no good. Is okay.
Talyu v'Yahiv. I'll go and say Garuman.
Talyu v'Yahiv is no good. What happens if Talyu v'Hifkir?
I would assume that in such a case that it would be Kona, because nothing's compelling him. Nothing's compelling him to be mafkir. Meaning, in the case of
that would seem to undermine the whole concept of Talyu v'Yahiv being no good, because then you can say he's mafkir.
Oh, wait a second.
And then
just one second.
It.
No.
And then he took it.
I meant to say the opposite. That in the case where he sold it, so at least what's compelling him is he wants the money. So therefore, we say Agav would say Gomer Machmir. But here, he's not getting a penny in return. So that would be the case of
heaven.
Let's just talk after Mincha, if you don't mind.